Not too long ago, we hosted Dr. Richard Weisbord, a Harvard researcher, on the podcast, and he shared with us just a snippet of suggestions for sports parents. And in that particular episode, Dr. Weisbord shared a couple of red flags for sports parents out there for them to know, goodness gracious, could that sports parent actually be me? You know, the one that everybody sees in the stands, the one that gets put on Twitter, the one that everybody talks about behind their back. Could that possibly be me? Certainly not me, JP. But here are a couple things that he said to look out for. Number one, sports parents, if you're out there and you're sitting alone in the stands, there might be a reason for that because of your behavior toward the game or toward the players. If you find yourself coaching from the sidelines because the coach in the dugout or the coach on the bench you don't feel is giving enough instruction for your daughter or for the players on the floor, you might be that guy. If sports are always coming first in your family schedule, before vacations, before anything else that you're doing, before chores, then that could be you as well. If the only thing that you talk about at the dinner table or in the car ride home is sports, or here's a big one, JP, that can be a real challenge. If you feel your daughter or your son's performance, they play well, you feel great. They play terrible, you feel awful. Those are all red flags that perhaps you could be that sports parent. What we want to talk about on the podcast this week is, what do we do? How do we navigate these troubled waters so we avoid some of these unhealthy behaviors as sports parents?
Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm your host, JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. The mission of this podcast is to help you become a better leader and build a better culture. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which provides one-on-one coaching and consulting for leaders. Learn more about us at tocculture.com. This episode is brought to you by the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, our newsletter includes two things you don't want to miss out on. Firstly, the notes to that week's podcast episode. Whether you're listening while driving the car, out for a run, or doing the dishes, we don't want you to miss the biggest takeaways from each episode. Secondly, each newsletter is a short article from myself or Nate on leadership and culture. These articles are designed to inspire, encourage, and provide practical insights into leadership and culture building. Our content is a perfect fit for anyone who wants to stay up to date with the latest trends and insights in culture building. You can subscribe to the newsletter at tocculture.com or by clicking on the link in the details of each episode. So Nate, without a doubt, I knew this day would come where I would really start to experience some of the great challenges of being a sports parent. You know, I've gotten to spend the last 15, almost 20 years here observing and criticizing parents for a long time. And now here I am in this moment, and I can start to see where things go wrong for certain parents. I mean, honestly, I remember when my first son was born and they, you know, measure his feet and they're like, wow, he's got big feet. He's going to be really tall. All of a sudden, like the light bulb goes off in my head. I'm like, oh, he might have a future in the NBA, you know, like. And I remember a few years, you know, after that, and my daughter has her first, Gaelic football match here in Ireland. And it's not her first match, but it's the first one where she plays really like with passion and goes out there and competes. And all of a sudden I see her enjoying it and I see her scoring a bunch. And I'm like, oh, she might have a bit of a career here. Like, she could be really, really good. And I get this kind of this dopamine hit of seeing my kids play well on the field. And this, they're only like 6 or 7, and I go, oh man, this could go really bad really quickly if I don't pay attention to really what's going on within my own self, right? My own kind of ambitions that, or maybe dreams that I might even have for my own kids, right? And this is where I think early on, probably as parents, we can start to move off track and kind of into those areas that lead to some of those, you know, red flags that Richard Weisbord talked about. And so for me, I feel like I'm developing kind of like a warning light, right? A little in my head. Anytime where I start to be aware of my own thinking around my kids and their sporting experience, that's really centered on me, my ambitions, my desires, and what's important to me, like this light starts to go off and it's kind of like this caution light, right? Or be careful here, right? You got to really be careful of what you're saying and how you're interacting here. And I really pay attention a lot to that warning light, because at the end of the day, I have seen this go bad so many times. I have seen not crazy people. I've seen really good, well-intentioned adults lose their way as a parent because this ambition or drive just takes over when it comes to sports. And I don't want that to be me.
I think, JP, for me, you know, over the years in my career, I've experienced some amazing sports parents that have been part of our programs and great benefits that have come from that for our kids and for our coaches and really for our whole community. And I've experienced some really bad sports parents, you know, that one that tried to take my, you know, a couple that tried to take my job and a couple that were successful doing so, you know. And so I think I've always been critical automatically of just being in the sport parent role without really ever understanding or empathizing with what can actually be difficult about walking in those shoes until my daughter started playing, you know, sports, organized sports here this past year. So I think my perspective has become a little bit more enlightened in the sense that there are things that are just naturally difficult. I mean, you mentioned, you know, your own ego being caught up in your child's performance. I think that's a huge issue. You know, our sense of fairness when a youth umpire maybe isn't as good as a major league umpire, and yet we expect the strike zone to be as consistent or, you know, what have you. I think, as Dr. Weisbord said, it does feel great. It's awesome when your children go out and perform well. Like, that's a unique feeling that I really have never experienced before until watching my kid do something well, you know, in basketball or softball. And so I've never really had to identify with that or learn to, I don't want to say deal with that, but enjoy it in a way that's healthy. I think another big challenge for parents is that oftentimes our kids are interested in sports because we're interested in sports, because dad coaches basketball, or because mom played volleyball, or because, you know, Uncle Jimmy was a great runner, or whatever it might be, that there's a natural sort of connection that players see our experience and enjoyment in sports that draws them into the game. And quite frankly, what does that mean? Well, that means I've got a lot of knowledge about the game itself. And so sometimes it can be hard to watch another coach lead a team in a sport that you yourself played all the way through high school or perhaps in college or still play recreationally, or a coach that doesn't have as much experience as you do, whatever. Like, all of those factors can make it just difficult, right? It's just a difficult environment. And it's different if my daughter's playing a sport that I've never played before. I don't know anything about softball. It's easy for me to sit back and just watch versus watching her play basketball. That's a different experience for me. I think one rule of thumb that has been helpful for me is thinking about my daughter's participation in sport as I would think about her going to a friend's house and playing with Barbies. I'm not going to micromanage her play with Barbies. I'm not necessarily going to ask a bunch of pointed questions about her strategies in the make-believe Barbie world, right? Like, I'm going to be happy that she enjoyed time with her friends, but that's her experience, right? And I'm trying to sort of walk a similar path with her experience in sports.
Yeah, and just so many of those things that you just shared there, Nate, I just really resonate with. One is just, there's this coach inside of me, right? And it's really hard to separate the coach from the parent. And just yesterday, I was out with my six-year-old Kieran, and we were hitting the ball around in a sport here in Ireland that's very popular called hurling, right? If you want to know more about it, look it up. It's a fascinating sport, all right? But either way, I've been learning about the sport and been doing a little bit of coaching with Elena, my seven-year-old's team. And so I understand that, you know, the way you hold the hurling stick is a little bit different. Swap the hands that to a baseball bat. Either way, we're hitting around and he's left-handed and he keeps putting his hand in the wrong place. The coach in me wants to keep saying, fix your hands. If you want to be a really good player someday, you're going to have to get your hands right. And honestly, I'm not really sure that I know exactly my role in that. Is it just to go out there and have fun? You know, I know my dad had a great balance when it came to my relationship. He would show me drills. He would teach me different things around basketball and taught me to, you know, work on my left hand, not just my right hand. And as I reflect on that experience, sometimes I think I can jump into coach mode so quick without their permission, right? And I'm not even sure I fully know how to navigate that situation, but it's one of those situations where my warning light is going off of just be cautious here. Be careful, right? Don't just try to just jump in and be the coach, because you could instantly ruin the joy out of the experience. And so what I just did in that is I said, hey, I'm giving you tips. If it starts to get annoying and you don't want to hear it anymore, just say, Dad, shut up. And that's kind of how I've left it at this point. And sure enough, this morning we're out there and I'm hitting around with my daughter and she told me, Dad, stop talking, you know, and that was it, right? And I just shut my mouth, right? And we moved on from there because once again, here I was trying to coach them up and being in coach mode, and that's not what they needed or wanted.
Well, that example, JP, of you throwing it around in the backyard might sound like a simple one, but I think it really does illustrate what's been an important, I don't know if boundary is the right word, but guidepost for my relationship with Adelaide, my 9-year-old. And when she started basketball, and this is, you know, I'm coaching her third grade team. So this is talking a little bit about the coach-daughter, you know, relationship, which can also be a little bit tricky and might be its own conversation for another podcast sometime. But I think the thing that I tried to emphasize to her was practice is up to you. Like if we go out in the driveway and you want to shoot, I'm happy to come out and shoot with you. If you want to work on something that we're doing in practice, I'm happy to do that. But that's always up to you. Same thing with the car ride home. Like I'm going to ask you about practice. I'm going to ask her about softball practice. I asked her this morning about her orchestra lesson. If she doesn't want to talk about it, then she just has to say, it was fine. I don't really have much to say about it. And that's the signal. Okay, let's talk about something else. So she's always in control of that relationship and making the decision about playing in the yard. How much do I want to be coached? You know, does she just want to go outside and play knockout? We'll do that without any coaching at all. I'm sitting there watching all these things she's doing wrong. We're just playing a game, Dad. We're just playing a game. You got your dad hat on right now. And I really try hard not to screw that up. But I do think that's been significant guidance that we've given to some of our other coaches who are coaching their daughters or their sons, that you can always offer. Do you want help? Do you want to work on something right now? But it's up to them whether or not they want to follow through with that, compared to the hard driving parent that says, look, if we're going to sign you up for this league, we're going to get up at 6 a.m, you know, twice a week, and you're going to work on it, you know, or you're going to do this. But the dad or the mom is the one that's driving the activity, and the player or the child doesn't have a choice in, you know, that relationship or in that activity. I think that's a significant red flag.
Yeah, and a great example is as your kid gets older and maybe they've shared dreams or ambitions with you. And I remember a good friend of mine, Robert Klim, he had a son who shared he wanted to play college basketball someday. And he said, I'm committed to waking up every morning at 6 a.m. and getting up shots. Dad, will you drive me? And Robert was like, sure, but I'm not going to wake you up and I'm not going to force you to it. And so they had this agreement that if he was going to get up the next morning, right, all he had to do was to signal to his father was to put his basketball shoes outside the door. And if when Robert was going to bed, he saw the shoes, he's like, okay, I guess I'm getting up in the morning and I'm driving him to the gym at 6 a.m. He supported him, but the day that he didn't put the shoes out, he wasn't going to drive him. And that was kind of their agreement where all of a sudden the son's in control, the father supporting that, right? But once again, the son is always in control and he's making those decisions.
That story, JP, reminds me of another thing that we've really tried to emphasize with Adelaide, and that is just learning responsibility within her sport. And so you talked there about the son had to, you know, get his shoes out and put them by the door. He has to remember to do that, right? To signal to dad that they're going to get up in the morning. I heard you talk about it at a parent workshop before, you know, not the parent not doing things for the child that they can do for themselves. And we can take that in lots of different directions. But what that's looked like for our relationship, my relationship with my daughter, is that, you know, whether it's orchestra lessons or it's basketball practice, I will remind her the night before, remember tomorrow you need to take your softball stuff and pack your bag because we're not coming home after school, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to do that for you in the morning. And so it's up to her. If she wants to pack it and get it ready by the door that night, fine. If she thinks she can get up and get it done in the morning, fine. Well, lo and behold, you're never going to believe this. You know, we get to a practice and all of a sudden she doesn't have a bat and she doesn't have her water bottle. And she's asking me, Dad, can I have your water bottle? Because I forgot mine. Well, I'm going to go work out while she's at practice and I need a water bottle, JP. And I remembered mine. So I told her, no, I brought my water bottle. There's a water fountain by the, you know, by the field. You're going to survive. The human body can go 3 days without water. You forgot, you know, and maybe that sounds harsh. Maybe I could have just given her mine and I could have used the water fountain at the school or when I'm working out, but it wasn't my responsibility, you know, and I can give you other examples of her forgetting her shoes or, you know, when it's her responsibility, I'm not bailing her out when she forgets. I think that's important. That's what my parents did with me to, you know, to learn a little bit more just what it meant, because again, the commitment to the team also means being prepared, you know, for practices and games, and that should be her job. And so we let her face the consequences when she doesn't, you know, have her things for a practice or for a game.
Yeah, I love that. It's a great example. I think so often as parents, you know, today we get really excited about the benefits of sports. Like, we want our kids to play sports because it's good for their physical activity and social. And there's so many things you can learn through sports. And so then we end up kind of saving our kids from some of those responsibilities. We'll pack their bag. We'll do all these things because we want them to go there, right? We want them, you know, to be in sports. And we should want that, but at the same time, they should want it as well. And they should have to earn that. It's not an entitlement for them. And growing up, my parents really drilled that home, right? My dad loved basketball. He wanted me to play basketball. But if I didn't do my chores, I didn't go to basketball practice. Simple, right? You know, basketball was something that had to be earned. And I've told this story probably in this podcast before, but probably the most significant thing that my parents did to support me and my basketball career was when I was in sixth grade, I wasn't meeting the A's and B standard in my academics that they had set for me. And I didn't get to play on Sunday in the biggest game of the year. And I was crushed. My team was crushed. We lost. My coach was upset. But they said, hey, this is the standard and we know you were capable of it. And then a year later, same thing happened. I had an F in Latin. And my mom said, sorry, until your grade is up to an A or B, which we know you're capable of doing, you don't play. And my mom held me accountable. And she also sat down with me at the kitchen table and worked with me every night to get the grade up. And I tell that story because it is so significant, because it wasn't just, you know, I walked away thinking academics were important. Honestly, that probably wasn't the biggest lesson I learned from there, right? I didn't have an issue with making A's and B's for the rest of my academic career. And it probably saved my parents a lot of pain and suffering and, you know, and trying to motivate me and get me to the standard. But probably one of the most impactful things for me around my basketball career, and probably why I was able to get to a Division I walk-on spot at the University of South Carolina, was because I saw basketball as a privilege. And I just had so much more intrinsic motivation. And I think if they had constantly, you know, gone out of their way to take away these responsibilities and to make it easier to play basketball for me, I don't think I would have seen it in the same way. And so I think it actually, you know, tapped into this intrinsic motivation that I think so much of our young people lack in sports today, because we're constantly saving them from responsibilities in life just to get them there because we want them to be in the sport, instead of making it about, do they really want it?
That reminds me, JP, of an article that I wrote for the newsletter a while back here called "The Job Is Not to Rescue." And we talked a little bit in that article about how there's just this temptation as a parent to try to rescue our kids. Sometimes when they struggle, sometimes when they're the victim of poor coaching, JP, or bad teaching at school, or, you know, whatever it might be. And we see our job as, you know, to right these wrongs for the benefit of the child, right? So your parents very easily could have gone to the school instead of going to you to fix the grade. They could have complained to the teacher. They could have, you know, done all kinds of things that would not have taught you anything about responsibility. Another place I've seen this, a good friend of mine whose daughter is playing some club basketball, he's a basketball coach, and, you know, he's watched for 2 years just what he and I both would agree are not great coaching practices. And so finally he went to the club director and said, hey, do you need some help with this team? I'd be happy to help out. He's been a varsity coach for a long time. Club director says, yeah, that'd be great to have some experience in there. He parachutes in, you know, and he rescues them from that poor coaching. And that's a tough place to be, because his daughter's going to benefit from a little more activity. The whole team really was going to benefit. But what do we learn from that? You know, like, what does the child learn? They're going to have teachers down the road that aren't great, or that they don't connect with, or that are hard on them, or not hard enough on them. And they're going to have to figure out how to get the most out of those situations. Same thing with their boss someday, you know, same thing with their spouse on particular days, whatever it might be. And so even though the temptation is often there, even when it comes to like finances, you know, if your team has to raise a little bit of money doing a car wash and a can drive so they can afford a tournament, there's a temptation sometimes as a parent or a group of parents to say, oh, we'll just throw in a little bit extra and the kids won't have to do anything. We don't have to come in on a Saturday morning. And again, we're just deferring their growth in the area of taking responsibility and ownership over their experience or their opportunities there with their team. And I think that's another place where we just have to be careful. I think it doesn't mean parents can never be involved in those ways, but I think we have to be aware of the long-term consequences when we do step into some of those kind of situations.
Yeah, you just touched on two really big things that I want to kind of circle back on. One is this, you know, the fundraising thing. I mean, it's a growing thing today to have these fundraisers within clubs and schools where the athlete actually doesn't really have to put any effort in other than just send a few texts out, or the parents are doing all the fundraising. And we're wondering why athletes are entitled today, right? Because they're not actually having to earn that gear bag. They're not having to earn that opportunity, right? That you're missing such a huge opportunity to teach them about gratitude, because they need to learn what it costs, right? They need to experience and put a little bit of effort into that fundraiser to get that gear bag or to get that trip. My parents taught me that at a young age. They wanted to support my dreams, right? I wanted to play college basketball someday. And I found this amazing basketball camp, the Morgan Wooten basketball camp in Maryland. And I lived in South Carolina, and they said, hey, we'll drive you there. Right? The camp cost probably that day, you know, $300-$400, which is a lot of money. They said, and we'll also pay for half the camp. But if you want to go to this camp, you're going to have to pay for the rest, the other half. Now I'm in fourth grade. What does this mean? That means I'm in my backyard, I'm chopping wood, and I'm painting the house all summer to save money. But what did that teach me? It taught me to be grateful for that opportunity, right? I got there, there's 500 kids. There's a legendary Hall of Fame coach, Morgan Wooten, in the front. And I'm sitting there in the front with a notepad and a pen. And I am taking and writing down everything this guy says. And I did that for 4 years. Every year I'd be in the front, sitting there taking notes. I valued that experience. I had to put something into it, right? To be able to have that opportunity. And so often I think parents are like, my kid has this dream or this passion. I want to give them every opportunity they can, or I want to give them all the opportunities that I never had. And I get that. I get that we want to support them, but we also have to have them invest in that as well. You also mentioned something I want to touch on really quickly too, which is to save them from the bad coach, the bad leader. Surprisingly, even though I'm not coaching high school basketball anymore, I still get a lot of emails from angry parents. They are emailing me to get advice on, you know, oftentimes it's, hey, my son's coach is very transactional, or it's just really getting on the coach. And I'm sure in many of those emails, the coach might be your bad coach, right? He may be a little bit transactional, right? But these parents are so worried about that experience, right? And the damage it could be done to them. And I have gone through a traumatic experience of an emotionally abusive high school basketball coach. So I definitely empathize with that. And there's definitely a line where you go, hey, you know what? My kid's coming off that team because he doesn't need to be in that environment, or she doesn't need to be in that environment, because that's really damaging to them. But there's also a point of just your kids need to learn to deal with the crappy boss, right? They just need, because that's going to come. They're going to have a boss that doesn't care about them. They're going to have a boss that doesn't like them. They're going to have a boss that doesn't explain things well and still holds them accountable to it. Like, they're just going to have so many experiences. And just like you said, if we swoop in there and we try to get involved and save them from that tough experience, then how are they going to go out into the working world, right? What are they going to do when they're 25, 26 and their boss sucks? Right? What are they going to do in that situation, right? You can't step in and save them from that. So it's not just feed them to the wolves in that situation, but it's as we as parents should be there, and we should be supporting them around, hey, what can you do, right? Just once remember, what is within your control in this situation? And those are some great learning opportunities, not just the amazing transformational Nate Sanderson coaches in the world, right? That's not going to be every coach. That's not going to be every leader for them.
I think what you're describing there, JP, can be especially challenging when you're talking about younger athletes. Again, my daughter just turned 9. You know, you're talking about working with 6 and 7 year olds in your backyard. And, you know, a lot of times at those lower levels in particular, you're getting volunteer coaches, you know, and very few of them have 20 years of coaching varsity basketball like, you know, like I do. But I'll tell you one thing that I learned this year coaching third graders in basketball. Holy hell, it's a complicated sport to teach as somebody that hasn't played before. You know, you just take so many things for granted working with high school players or middle school players that they don't know how to throw the ball in bounds. They don't know how to hold the ball. They don't know how to, They don't know the geography of the court. You know, I'm starting to go through all these things. And one thing that I've gained a greater appreciation for is that beginner's mind, where they're just starting to learn something for the first time. And I remember, you know, coaching one of our third grade games, and somebody said, you know, it doesn't look like they're running an offense out there. And we aren't. You know, we're just trying to stay out of each other's way, like literally move away from each other. That's the offense, right? And you could list 1,000 things that we don't know how to do yet. And my answer to that would be because we haven't worked on it. We can't make a layup or dribble or stop and pick up the ball without someone taking it out of our hands. We're not going to get into running a read and react offense, you know? And so sometimes for parents, that can be really hard to sit back and watch because you think, well, they should know this. They should be able to do this. Why is she doing that? Well, the answer is because we haven't taught it yet. We haven't learned it yet. We haven't worked on it yet. And that can be tough to remember when you're kind of sitting back. And let me tell you, some of those early years in youth sports, they're tough to watch. Softball's tough to watch when no one can throw strikes. You know, basketball's tough to watch when no one can make a shot, right? And that can be a challenge too. But we have to remember what it felt like when we first started to learn something for the first time as well.
My kids really aren't old enough to really have an opinion on the state of the coaching or their own, you know, view of whether it's good coaching or bad coaching. But one thing I've done right now is just to really, they don't leave the field, they don't leave the court until they've gone up to the coach, looked them in the eye and said, thank you. Right? Like that's just a habit we're drilling in from early stage. But there's going to come a day where they're going to come home and they're going to say, I don't like coach. Right? Or I don't think coach is doing the right thing, or he's not playing. And that's going to be the day where now I got to really step up and teach them like, well, let's focus on what he does do well, or she does do well, or let's focus on just being grateful for the fact the time that they come after work and they spend time with you, whether you like it or not, or whether you have fun in practice or not, you still should be grateful for that opportunity and for them giving of that time. I think that's really, really important. And that's something worth mentioning as well. Something I recognized in myself was after every practice they'd have or every game, I would ask, hey, did you have fun today? And obviously we want our kids to have fun, but I think that question is probably pretty annoying for a kid. And secondly, you know, fun shouldn't be the only measuring stick to whether they should have gone to practice or was it a good practice or was it a good game or not, right? When you lose 10-1, you know, I don't really want my kid to have too much fun in that sense. I don't want them to really enjoy getting your butt whooped. Like you want them to say, oh, this is tough. I got to go out and work harder, right? So like, this shouldn't be the only question we're asking kids afterwards. And I think you asked some great question there. It's just, how was today? Like, that's the same question I ask them when they come home from school. I don't ask, how was school fun today? It was like, how was school today? Just tell me about it, you know? And it, like you said, if they want to open up and share a lot, great. I think the other thing too, that we've heard a lot about in the past is that phrase, I love to watch you play. And huge fan of the organization. And we've had Asian Bape from ilovetowatchyouplay.com on the podcast before. And I think that's a great reminder to our kids. But I sometimes think it kind of feeds sometimes a bit of this like super positive narrative that we give kids. And I've observed it at the youth level. No matter what they do, everyone's shouting, good job, well done. And it's like the kids know that they're not doing a good job, A, because they're getting absolutely creamed. They're down 10-1, or the girl hasn't hit the ball or made contact with it the entire day, right? You know, it's just, sometimes there's this over positivity and kids really kind of see through that and it just doesn't resonate. And so I'm just trying to be aware of, hey, when are some moments where I actually have enjoyed watching them play? And I love, and what was it about that? I loved their effort. I loved the type of teammate they were. I loved how they never gave up, right? If we're going to say those things, we better be specific. And outside of that, don't just give these false platitudes all the time.
What you described right there, JP, brings to mind just another, I think, responsibility that we have as sports parents, which is to manage the superpower of our influence over how kids perceive their coaches or the game or their experience, et cetera, right? So, you know, I'm sitting back watching 9U softball, and for 70 minutes, not one single player on our team puts the ball in play. So it's either walk or strikeout the entire game. And that's not very fun to watch. I think it's probably even less fun to play, you know, when they're just standing out there watching people walk around the bases. So it's important for me as a parent, you know, when I'm asking or we're talking briefly about the game on the way home, to try to frame that in a way that is positive for her, you know, and not just rip on the coach or rip on the league or, you know, they should be having coach pitch or whatever. It's just sometimes it's just the encouragement of, you know, that's how everybody starts. I mean, talk about our high school kids that play softball. When Lily C played in third grade, it was the exact same thing. Look at her now, starting third baseman for the, you know, varsity team, right? Like, you're just learning the structure of the game. We know whatever that is, but providing the perspective for her to understand it's not always going to be like this, but this is where it starts for everybody as they're learning the game. And I think, you know, there's lots of research that talks about where kids' inner dialogue comes from and critical voices come from. And essentially, they're shaped by the voices that they hear the most. And oftentimes, that's their parents and coaches. And so I talk to our parents about this at our parent meetings for our varsity, you know, program, that you've got to take responsibility for that influence and use it in a way that's beneficial, not only for your child, but also for our team and for our program.
Yeah, as we're kind of wrapping up here today, Nate, I think there's just one thing I'd also share on this that's probably been one of my biggest focuses in the last few months with my kids and around sports and life in general, which is I think I was probably a little bit in some ways overcautious about being involved in their sports, coaching them. I was afraid of what I might turn out to be. And yet I looked back at my dad's example, and my dad had great passion and love for the game of basketball, and he never hesitated to share that. And yet he did it in a way where we also knew that he still loved us even if we wanted to play basketball or not play basketball, or where we played well or didn't do well. So how did he share the passion with us, though? I think, you know, when I look back on it, one of the coolest things was before every season, we would sit down and we'd watch the same two movies. You know, before every basketball season, we'd watch Hoosiers, which was a great story around a team coming together. And we watched the movie The Pistol about Pistol Pete Maravich. And it's a really cheesy kind of old-timey film, but it had a great message around a kid that had a dream and he just worked his tail off. And that was it. You know, like it was just sharing those moments. We grew up in a great time for basketball with Michael Jordan in the 90s and, you know, winning all the NBA finals that he did. I mean, just being able to sit down there and just like, are we ready for the game? Right. He was just that excitement. And those were huge moments. And as that passion, you know, I became more and more passionate about it and would work on basketball. I'd share my dreams. He'd say, hey, do you want some help? And I'd say, yeah. And then he'd go up there, he'd set up a few garbage cans and get me dribbling around there and say, all right, good luck. And then he'd leave me to dribble through the garbage cans and work on my layups, right? Like I was still always in control of the experience, but he never hesitated to say, gosh, basketball is a great game, isn't it? Like, and it was something that we could connect on. But for my other siblings, because there were seven of us, we were a big family, not all of them were super passionate about it. And he always made an effort to find something that they were interested in, whether that was the choir, whether that was a different sport. He always made an effort to find something to connect with their kids on about, even though it probably wasn't as interesting to him as basketball was. And so I think I'm just carrying that into my own parenting. Like, hey, I really enjoy sports. I really enjoy being around it. I don't need to hide that from them. I just need to be aware of making sure that it's kind of kept in check and it's still about them. And it's just about, I'm just sharing this with them. And if they want to partake, great. If they don't, not a big deal.
JB, I think for me at the end of the day, the most important question that I ask myself when it comes to just my involvement in my 9-year-old sports experience, that is the sport, is her involvement in sport enhancing our relationship, father-daughter, or is it hindering it? And I come back to that over and over and over. You know, when she wants to play in the driveway, when she doesn't, when she wants to stay out for a sport, when she wants to try something new, when she wants to go to a game, whatever it might be, I want to align myself with behaviors that are going to allow us to enjoy that experience together, to draw us closer and to not become something where I'm pushing too hard. I want it more than she does. I'm driving towards something that she's not even sure exists. You know, when you talk about your son being in the NBA, you know, it just comes back at the end of the day that we want to enjoy sport, just like what you're talking about there. And I want sports to enhance my relationship with my daughter, and that responsibility is up to me.
This episode is brought to you by my latest book, The Culture System, A Proven Process for Creating an Extraordinary Team Culture. It's been endorsed by many exceptional leaders and coaches, one of those being 2022 NBA Coach of the Year, Monty Williams, who called it a special book with inspiring stories, applicable strategies, and a proven model for developing team culture. This book is more than just a collection of practical tools for leaders. It teaches a proven framework that some of the world's best organizations and teams use. It's packed with real-life examples and case studies that show you how these ideas can be implemented in any context. Whether you're a coach, manager, or leader, you'll find invaluable insights to help you build the culture you want. Don't miss out on this opportunity to transform your team. Visit myculturesystem.com to learn more about the book, or you can get your copy on Amazon or Audible today. All right, that's it for today's episode of the Coaching Culture Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, we're grateful for people who take 15 to 30 seconds just to leave us a review. And I know your friends appreciate it when you send them an episode that they find valuable. So don't hesitate to share today's episode.